Let's go right out to Edmonton because, well, everything's going out to Edmonton. The Stanley Cup will be in Edmonton later this fall. Almost said summer. At least we hope. Let's go to Ryan Rashog. And Ryan, my first question is, are you okay?
Why are you asking me that?
Well, I follow you on Twitter, as you know.
Oh, the tweet. Yes, yes. That was devastating, fellas. Like, I'm not much of an outdoorsman, and when something that size, so I'm getting ready to shoot a stand-up, landed right on my temple, and when I reached up to grab it, it was substantial. Like, it felt like there was something substantial in my hand. It rattled me.
We
had some weight to it.
And luckily we're on TV, and TSN4 is showing the video, so it's giving part of our audience. And one of the guys who usually is on this show, sitting in the studio, is our friend Jamie McLennan. And if he's watching, it's just affirming that he is never going outdoors because he is scared of bugs.
Yeah, well, and he's from around these parts, so he knows. The amazing thing is the power of Twitter. The fact that something like that can happen and 19,000 people watched it is that's mind-boggling.
Well, we want to make sure that you're okay because, well, first off, I care for your livelihood. And also, you should be a really busy guy. You usually are, but has excitement started to build in that city as we get now to... What, 3 weeks until the actual games start happening?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on who you ask, right? There's a certain segment of the hockey fan that would say, well, I'm not going to be out partying and watching the games anyways. So whether, you know, I'm watching them in my basement, if they're in Toronto or Vegas or Vancouver or wherever, it's not going to matter. But then I think there's the other probably more diehards who are really intrigued at the idea of having all these players in town and the competition happening in town here. And that, you know, I think when word came out that the Stanley Cup final and the conference finals were potentially happening here, I think that definitely shot a little bit of excitement into people. You know, because we don't know what things are going to look like a couple months down the road. And outdoor gathering, I mean, the number has just gone up recently for the number of people that can gather outdoors here in Alberta. And maybe that number goes up again. And so the potential for watch parties and such a couple months down the road might be fairly exciting for hockey fans. And you know, if the Edmonton Oilers manage to make any sort of run at all and get a little bit deep into the playoffs, then, yeah, I think there could be great payoff there for Edmonton hockey fans.
Well, before now, I guess you're not trolling the hallways of the political leaders anymore. You're our inside guy for all things Ottawa and government, so maybe you can knock that off your to-do list and just focus on the hockey and the sports. Did a great job doing all that, Ryan. But we know in Toronto, it sounds like the players are going to be around the exhibition grounds, and that's where the hotel, and they're going to hang out. In Edmonton, trying to create a bubble, can you maybe just explain to the listeners, what will life be like for the players? Where will they be hanging out for the better part of a couple months?
Yeah, so there's a brand new hotel right across the street from a brand new, well, fairly new rink. So the JW Marriott across the street, it's really nice, it's a big hotel. They'll be able to fit all the players there. And you can walk out the front doors of the JW and cross the street and you're at the rink. But there's also a pedway system, and I believe that's going to be the access point. You don't actually have to go outside if you don't want to. The pedway goes across to Ford Hall. Now, Ford Hall is this massive, it's a massive pedway that crosses 104th, which is one of the main streets downtown. So it's kind of this pedway system. And this is all going to be within the bubble. Ford Hall will be within the bubble. And then there will also be the ice district. They've just recently finished this huge courtyard area. Kind of think somewhat LA Live in principle. That's finished now, and that will also be all within the context of the bubble. So players will have the hotel, they'll have, you know, there'll be things that can be set up for them inside in case it's a rainy day. There'll be things that are set up outside for them, you know, whether it's outside patios, places to watch games, places to hang out, you know, play some virtual golf, shoot some pool, whatever they want to do on a day off, right? Because on a day off, maybe you want to try and get away from things a little bit. You know, then there's also talk about, you know, maybe as things go on, the potential for golf excursions. They've done some work with a local golf course to try and isolate a day where they can, a day here or there where they can get players out to the course. So I think they tried, you guys, to make it very clear what the player experience was going to be like. They were pretty vocal about that. They wanted that to get out there because I think they felt like Edmonton might get overlooked in the process if they weren't a little bit squeaky. And I think that's why we heard more from the Edmonton bid than any other bid publicly.
Joined by Ryan Rashog, our TSN Edmonton Bureau reporter, and Bob McKenzie has been reporting for the last week about, you know, not only the return to play, but also a new CBA. And one of the big points that fans are just kind of grabbing onto is that the NHL would be going back to the Olympics. And there has always been that fear that Connor McDavid would go through his entire career and not play at the Olympics. Now that it looks promising, I know they still have to deal with the IOC and the IIHF, but just with dealing with Connor McDavid usually on a daily basis, I know you can't right now, how much does it mean for him to be able to play for Canada at the highest level and not have to play for Team North America?
Yeah, well, Connor will never really express, you know, the intensity of whatever feelings he has. Like, he tends to try and play it fairly safe, but he has always made it clear that he wants to play in the Olympics. I don't know if there was anybody more upset at the idea of the NHL not being in the next two Olympics than McDavid. Like, I think he wants to be there. Mm-hmm. I think if you think about his generation, you know, his age group, what they would have grown up watching. I mean, 2010 would have been a pretty pivotal moment in his hockey watching life, I think. I think McDavid wants to be there, and I think he's probably super excited at the idea, although it's a little ways away here. But, the guy wants to be there. He grew up watching Canada have glory on that stage. Why wouldn't he want a chance to go there and do it himself?
And I imagine, Ryan, like all the great ones, there are things competitively he wants to achieve, but also, you know, resume. He wants to have that experience and win a gold medal. That's what all the great players of his generation that he's looked up to have had a chance of doing, and he'll have that hopefully in 2022. But before he gets there, he's got to get through this summer and get back to camp. So how are the Oilers looking health-wise as guys kind of get back into the city, get back towards training camp, which starts up Monday? And, you know, who's going to play on Connor McDavid's left wing? I'm going to ask you a hockey question, if you can believe it, after 5 months.
All right.
I forget. I'm not sure. I asked something political and I got her nailed, boys. Listen, I think Ryan Nugent-Hopkins was spending some time there in and around when things shut down. I think there's a good chance you could see Nugent-Hopkins on the left side, Cassian over on the right. And then you go with Draisaitl down the middle and Yamamoto on the other wing there. Not sure what the left wing situation looks like on that second line. You got a few options, right? I mean, Ken Holland did a good job of putting some fairly usable players into the lineup at deadline time. If you recall, you know, Tyler Ennis came in and was a nice fit in a couple of different spots in the lineup. We'll see what Athanasiou brings them. Wasn't a great fit in the early stages for him, right, but we'll see. They've got some options. And then my guess is, guys, they're going to want some veteran presence in the lineup. So you could see guys like Chiasson and Neal in and around that fourth line, but guys who have been around that'll round out their sort of third and fourth line wings. But I would say Nugent Hopkins to answer your question, Johnny.
You know, it was funny. We were joking earlier in the show just the things that you forget because of the pandemic. And Athanasiou being the Oilers, like, oh, yeah, that's right. They did pick him up. one thing I
remember Mike Green, too, right?
Yeah. Like, it's all right. The trade deadline seems like, I don't know, a couple of years ago. And even if you ask me right now what the biggest deal was, it would take me probably 5 minutes to remember.
Yeah.
But one thing I do remember was, you know, the goalie situation was good, but it wasn't solidified by anyone. Is there one guy or another that probably is the inside track on the first game of this this play-in round?
Right. So if I would have to bet my mortgage on who's going to start, I would say Mike Smith. I think Dave Tippett will lean towards the veteran experience of Mike Smith in this situation. Now, if you look at the way that they had been playing in the months leading up to the shutdown, both guys had taken their turns really having dominant stretches. And right before everything shut down, Mikko Koskinen put together a string of like three or four games where he was ridiculous. Like, his numbers were ridiculous. And so to me, the messaging to these guys could be, look, you've both shown you could carry this thing. they've both had dips in their play as well. So there's faith in both of them. Make it a jump ball. Like, bring them into training camp and say, look, you know, play hard, show us, you know, through the couple of exhibition games. I think it's close enough between these two. You could go with just whoever looks better at the time. It's a short series, and you don't have time to back into it and let anybody feel their way in. Now, the one element that Mike Smith brings that I think they will like is that ability to grab that puck and fire it up the wall to wingers and defensemen and can nullify the other team's forecheck, and I could see Dave Tippett leaning towards having that asset in his lineup.
Did you just say a couple exhibition games? Do we know if it's going to be one or two?
I don't know. Good question. I don't know the answer to that. I would think that they would need to have a couple guys. Maybe I'm wrong, but think about it. If you're bringing 28 guys,
right,
and you, even if you potentially want to maybe use 23 or 24 of them through the course of the tournament, are there going to be guys on your roster that don't even get a chance at an exhibition game? Like, don't you need to get everybody into at least one exhibition game? And you can't do that if you only have one unless you're allowing 26, 27 guys on the bench. So maybe I'm overthinking
sense.
But...
Yeah, I just wonder if time will be of the essence or how many games they want to play. But two would be preferable. I just wonder if they get squeezed down to one. But I think a lot of people are looking at this series, Chicago-Edmonton, as one of the more fun series to watch in this play-in round.
Sure.
And with the unpredictability of what has gone on, you know, people like to say Chicago with their stars and Patrick Kane and Corey Crawford playing pretty well will pose a pretty significant test for Edmonton. What do you think of the matchup for the Oilers in the Blackhawks?
Yeah, I think it's advantage Edmonton. I think when you've got two of the most dynamic offensive players in the game heading into a series, that's a shorter series. I think it's advantage Edmonton. Their 5-on-5 play had really rounded out their ability to produce. The number one power play in the league, the number two penalty kill in the league. By the way, they'll have the number one special teams, both power play and penalty kill, left in the playoffs. So I think it's advantage Edmonton for a number of reasons. And Chicago defensively at times wasn't great this year. But there is that Patrick Kane factor. And we've watched over the years, you guys, when Patrick Kane decides he's going to, you know, he's going to get something done, he can be incredibly clutch, and he can dismantle teams when he chooses. So, you know, I think there's always that danger there. But if the layoff doesn't dramatically affect the efficiency of their power play, their ability to kill penalties. The other thing, too, and I'm not sure what you think about this, guys, but you got Ethan Bear playing basically top-pairing minutes. He's a rookie. Kyler Yamamoto playing on the second line and producing as a rookie. What are the chances that after a layoff this long, the Oilers can pick right back up where they left off with their special teams, with those two young, inexperienced players playing at that high level, and with the goaltending holding? Because if any one of those things comes out from underneath them, it really hurts their chances.
Ryan, before we let you go, because you're so tight with the federal government, any idea if they will allow the Blue Jays to play games in Toronto?
Yeah, was just working on that one, guys. So give me another 10 minutes and I'll have all the answers for you. No, I'm not sure, man. All I know is this, that when I see that the hoops that the NHL has jumped through, the integrity of this bubble they're going to try and create, how much detail has gone into this plan, how much it took for them to convince the federal government to, you know, ease up the quarantine a little, and then all of a sudden they're just going to start rolling ball players over the border en masse. Yeah. My jaw dropped a little bit. I was like, holy smokes, just knowing the hoops the NHL had to jump through.
Well, and I would only think people in your part of the country would be even more critical, just considering that your numbers have been low for a while, and it's only the last maybe a month that Ontario has been, you know, really gotten it down under 200, and it was 111 today. You know, like, there's a lot of support to just keep the borders shut down, you know, outside of obviously professional athletes. So
people want it to make sense, right? So whether you're a baseball fan or not, whether you're a hockey fan or not, lay the basics of the plan out, and if people can look at that and go, okay, I can kind of understand how that makes sense, then you're probably on pretty solid footing. That's my sense of the plan that the NHL has put into play. I'm not sure how it's going to go, but you can see how they feel like it makes sense. They're giving themselves the best chance. The situation baseball has going on, I'm maybe not quite as convinced.
Yeah.
Shaggy, one more thing before we let you go. Will the players be able to visit the mountains, which are right beside the arena?
Yes.
Based on the promotional. I just, like, where is that excursion?
In bath,
you know, kind of scheduled?
In bathrobes with champagne.
The quick trip to the mountains that apparently have just developed in the 4 months since I've last been to Edmonton.
So there's going to be Segways right outside the hotel you can hop on. And they're with the big beefy tires, so you can
they'd have to be
on the Segway.
And a big battery.
Groups of five or less and socially distanced with masks, but you can hop on a Segway and hit the mountain.
Perfect.
Beautiful.
Well, let's hope we get there. If we get to phase four, I think we've, or at least the league has gotten over a huge hurdle, and we're talking about playing games.
Mm. Oh, 100%. And you know what, guys, quickly as we leave, what I'll say is that I think in talking to people around the league, I think there's as much concern about getting through phase three as there is about what might happen in phase four. To me, phase three, where players are inside a bubble when they're at the rink but kind of doing their own thing the rest of the time, I think the risk of things to maybe get a little bit out of hand is every bit as significant in phase three as four. So I think there'll be a sigh of relief when all the planes land in the two cities and phase three is behind them.
Yeah, Bob was saying the same thing earlier in the show. It really, this next week is going to be crucial if they're able to pull this off. Ryan, great talking to you again. I'm glad that you're safe. Glad that you have avoided a murder hornet, and we can get back to talking about the left wing on Connor McDavid's line. So,
all right,
life's okay.
Keep talking hockey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Brian Rashog, our TSN Oilers reporter based in Edmonton and based in a city that is going to have a lot of the hockey world focused on it. And let's hope we're focused on it, because that means we've gotten to phase four. That really seems like a theme, doesn't it?
We got to get there. Honestly, don't we, Mark? I mean, we have 3 weeks of guys getting tested virtually every day at their training camps. Guys will have to pay attention. They'll get tested. Hopefully everyone tests negative. If they don't, you're just terrified of a guy getting it and then really spreading it through his team quickly over the course of a day of training camp or something before they know he has it. I don't know, but we're just fingers crossed that does not happen, really.
Really, it's like what we've been trying to do for the last 4 months. It's controlling those who do get it. And if Mike Johnson gets it, it's okay, keep Mike Johnson quarantined for the rest of the team.
Yep.
And make sure that those numbers continue to decrease, and then you're off and away and you're playing games, and hopefully Mike Johnson is playing those games.